Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Chances are, one of your favorite shows began with that sound. It's the sound of HBO's video logo. What came next was usually greatness. For nearly 50 years, HBO has been an innovator in television and media. James Andrew Miller has tried to capture, almost literally, all of that history in his new book, Tinderbox, HBO's Ruthless Pursuit of New Frontiers. James is an award-winning journalist who specializes in comprehensive oral histories, like ESPN and SNL. Could an oral history about WPR be next? I doubt it. But then again, I haven't received an interview request from Jim, so you never know. Jim conducted over 750 interviews to reveal the exclusive and comprehensive story of how Home Box Office went from frisky upstart to the epicenter of prestige television. That all turned into a doorstop of a book, clocking in at just under 1,000 pages. He joined us to share this history, or as much as we could cover, on how HBO created a revolutionary new content universe.
I think it fundamentally changed our relationship with TV and what TV could be in our lives. And first of all, we have to remember, we have to transport ourselves back to 1972. And so the idea that we could sit in our living room and watch a movie without commercials and without network censors blurting out language, nudity, and whatever else came along, I think was startling and revolutionary at the time. Second of all, it also, if you think about those qualities, HBO brought those things that you couldn't do at the network, violence, nudity, language, and other, to creative content that they were producing and buying. And I think that that fundamentally changed the nature. Look, you can't have a show like The Sopranos or Oz or so many other shows on network television. It also helped change the way in which storytelling was done on television. And then third, whether it was sports, documentaries, technology, and other things, I think that one of the things that happened with HBO was we were constantly being shown new ways to interact with television, new value propositions, if you will, that television had for us. And so I think it's an easy claim to make.
Mm-hmm, definitely. The origin story of HBO goes back to 1965 and a guy named Chuck Dolan. You have a quote from someone who told you that Chuck saw the future in ways that others did not. How was Chuck able to envision HBO?
Well, I think one of the things that he did was he decided that by being able to go outside the current architecture, outside the broadcast networks, outside of Washington, so to speak, and go directly to the home, there was a lot of things that you could do. He was particularly interested in sports and live sports.
And hello again, I'm Jim Lampley. We at HBO welcome you and the world of big-time boxing back to Japan to test the theory that ticket buyers on foreign shores will purchase what Americans seem increasingly unwilling to shell out for. Apparent mismatches for Mike Tyson in defense of his heavyweight crown. With me again now is our HBO boxing.
It was huge. Look, there was a period of time when boxing and uncut movies were really the two foundations. You know, we tend to think of everything going on now with HBO and for the last 40 years, 49 years. There was a period of time when those were the real two selling propositions for HBO to the consumers. And they took boxing, which had been somewhat moribund and was relegated to Saturday afternoons on the networks, brought it to prime time, and also just in time for like Mike Tyson and Thomas Hearns and Marvin Hagler and all these unbelievable boxers. And so I think boxing was a big engine for HBO's growth.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Sheila Nevins was the president of HBO Documentary Films, and she produced more than 1,000 docs for HBO. What impact did her contributions have?
Well, look, there's a powerful duality to Sheila Nevins running documentaries. She went very high with incredible investigations and documentaries about AIDS and Tourette's. I mean, the list is so long, including major ones like The Jinx and in the Scientology documentary. But she also went low, and she was responsible for, you know, spearheading the late night, very, very sexual in nature documentary series that HBO did. And those things were incredibly popular.
What are some of your turn-ons?
Oh, I mean, Chinese food.
I like when she watches Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. Maple syrup.
For me, silence usually turns me on a lot.
Andy Warhol.
Top Gun references.
I like rabbit food.
You talk to a lot of people, that's one of the first things that they remember about HBO was being able to turn on shows like Real Sex, Cat House, Taxicab Confessions, and see things that they hadn't seen before.
Chris Albrecht was very responsible for making comedy a big part of the HBO schedule. How did comedy content affect the growth of home box office?
Well, comedy winds up being another big, big driver for HBO's popularity. When you think about it, Doug, if you're a comedian in the 70s or the 80s, what's the prize? Well, the prize is being a guest on Johnny Carson's The Tonight Show. And you're going to get about 4.5 minutes to do your stand-up. You're going to be seen by millions and millions and millions of people, but you're also going to be at the mercy of network censors. So you're going to have to go through your routine. They're going to tell you what words you can say and what subjects you can talk about. And you can't mess around with it. I mean, if you were to violate one of their edicts, you're going to be kicked off television. There's no doubt about it. And along comes HBO. And HBO says, forget about 4.5 minutes. Forget about restrictions about language. Forget about restrictions about subjects. We're going to give you an hour. And we're going to give you your own comedy special.
Well, we have more ways to describe dirty words than we actually have dirty words. That seems a little strange to me. It seems to indicate that somebody was awfully interested in these words. They kept referring to them. They called them bad words, dirty, filthy, foul, vile, vulgar, coarse, in poor taste, unseemly, street talk, gutter talk, locker room language, barracks talk, bawdy, naughty, saucy, raunchy, rude, crude, lewd, lascivious, indecent, profane, obscene, blue, off color, risque, suggestive, cursive.
George Carlin,
swear.
I mean, he gets up there and he literally does the 7 words you can't say on television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, what could be better than that if you're a comedian? Robert Klein, Andrew Dice Clay, Robin Williams, Jerry Seinfeld. You go on and on and on right through the entire gamut of major comedians at that time. And so HBO wound up being an incredible, important place for these comedians, and in turn, something that the audience couldn't get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. How did HBO's early efforts at creating original programming go?
Well, they started off somewhat slow because they didn't want to really try and compete with the networks. And there were shows like Dream On, which was created by David Crane and Marta Kaufman, who went on to unbelievable success with Friends. There was First and 10 with O.J. Simpson. There was these other shows that came on. And then Larry Sanders' show and Oz were two big shows in HBO's early development because both of them registered in a meaningful ways, in different ways. Larry Sanders, because everybody in Hollywood watched it. Everybody in Hollywood loved it.
Larry, we're off the air. This is real life now. Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I'm here for three good reasons. Last show, big ratings, movie coming out. Bim, bam, boom. Otherwise, I'd be sitting home watching Nightline. As usual.
And they were like, hey, wait a second. What's HBO doing? I want to work there. And wait a second. I hear that they have a lot of freedom that they give to their creators and their stars that the networks don't do. So that became a really great ambassador for what HBO wanted to do. Oz was fearless. It was incredibly violent, incredibly vulgar.
Your precious little dream, your Emerald City, is now a ghetto. You been there lately? Crap all over the floors, drugs everywhere, the lack of primary colors,
Well, that unit is no longer my responsibility.
Yeah, I got no problem with that. What we don't want is that new attitude over there to come wafting this way. They hear about what's going on. Empowerment. They're gonna want the same thing here.
And you're suggesting what? That we make Unit B all white?
Yes.
Look, just start with the idea that it was a prison show. There's been a lot of medical shows on television, on network television, a lot of lawyer shows. Like, how many shows were set in a prison? Well, you don't really want to do that because it's such a dark, dangerous world. And HBO was instantly saying, we're going to go to places that the networks don't.
Yeah. We can't really talk about HBO without talking about David Chase's groundbreaking creation, The Sopranos. And I was surprised to learn that he didn't come up with the idea for the show. How did The Sopranos change the HBO universe?
I assume you're talking about the very idea of the show, right? And
that's the premise, you know, yeah.
There's a unsung hero named Lloyd Braun, who was working with David at the time when he had an overall deal at Brillstein Gray. And David was coming up with a bunch of ideas, and none of them were really registering. And Lloyd one day was walking him to the elevator and said, you know, what if there was something about, like, The Godfather was one of my favorite movies and such a great movie. And what if there was something that was like, for now, you know, updated version of what The Godfather was? And David says, well, you know, I'm Italian. And it just took off from there. But I think it shows what I like doing is kind of peeking behind the curtain of ideas and shows and stars' lives and talk about those things that, you know, we didn't know before and how they wound up having such a huge effect on, you know, what we're able to see.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of HBO's most groundbreaking series is Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm. Even by HBO standards, I would say it's groundbreaking. How was Curb Your Enthusiasm developed?
Well, it originally started as a mockumentary that Larry David did basically about his post-Seinfeld life and about returning to stand-up. And so it was almost like a reality show. He had a crew following him. And one of the things that happened was after it was shot, Chris Albrecht and Larry and Carolyn Strauss talked about the fact that there was something that was more interesting about Larry's life than just him doing stand-up. And they were smart enough to give him an incredible amount of freedom to let him do the show the way he wanted to do it. And because of that singular decision, that decision to give him endless amounts of rope and freedom, the show was still on more than 20 years later.
She knew what she was doing.
Okay.
She was born to it.
Okay.
She was great.
All right. Okay. I'm sorry. This dinner's not going very well.
Sorry.
And the reason it's not going well is because the wrong people are in the middle.
What?
Yeah. You can't handle the middle. You're not a middler.
Andy, really? Not everybody has the personality for the middle.
It's very presumptuous of you to even be sitting here.
Freddie happens to be a great middle. I know that. I'd like Freddie and Cassie to switch, and I'd like Andy and Larry.
It's your house. I have told these stories before and got laughs.
Thank you, Cheryl.
You're welcome.
Anyway, let me just finish the story.
No, Sky, no
more boat.
No.
Let's look at the other side of the coin. HBO's biggest mistakes over the years. What are they?
Well, look, first of all, let's start with the obvious proviso that nobody bets a thousand. There are four shows that easily come to mind: House of Cards, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, and The Crown. Now, it could easily be argued, and I detail it in the book, that all four of those shows could have wound up on HBO. The reasons why they didn't are different, but I think that they're illustrative in a couple ways. One was, in the case of House of Cards, HBO was thinking about doing it, wanted to do it, and then all of a sudden, Netflix is there, and HBO is going to do a pilot. Netflix gives them two full seasons. Well, that's one of those clarifying moments where you realize the business has changed, and HBO doesn't enjoy the advantages that it used to have. Look, can you imagine a world where those four shows are on HBO? That's going to be incredibly detrimental to both AMC and Netflix. Without those shows. So there were serious consequences.
Mm-hmm. HBO created the concept of streaming, and now it faces competition from other streaming services like Netflix, Disney Plus, and Hulu. How do you think the future of home box office will play out?
Right. Well, that's, Don, you just asked the million-dollar question. I think we're sitting here at the end of 2021, and we're looking at an industry that is in, I wouldn't say chaos, but it's been disrupted so much, and there are so many players trying to adapt and survive and grow that it's unclear how HBO positions itself. I think this is probably one of the most uncertain times for HBO. And I'm not sure that the kind of success that they've had over the past 49 years is guaranteed to them for the future.
James Andrew Miller, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Tinderbox. It's a great book.
Thank you so much for having me.
James Andrew Miller is the author of Tinderbox, HBO's Ruthless Pursuit of New Frontiers. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Charlie Behrens, Jackie Cation, and James Andrew Miller. Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Just search for Wisconsin Public Radio and Beta. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Some people make fun of me for the facial hair, but you know, you wake up at 3 a.m., go to bed at midnight for like 12 days straight, you'll get some whiskers too.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I am so relatable.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Kind of hurts a little. Thank you. Thank you. And sorry again to ask. Tell your folks I said
okay,
hey.
Okay, we'll do it.
All right.
All right, take care now.